A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello folks, David here. Before we get underway with this edition of the Tennis Podcast, I'm here to remind you about US Open Fan Week, which begins Tuesday, August 22nd and runs to Sunday, August 27th. You can get into the grounds at Flushing Meadows free for any of those 6 days, and there'll be some amazing tennis, star-studded events and activities for all. They also have ticketed feature events during Fan Week that you don't want to miss, including Stars of the Open on Wednesday, August 23rd. That's scheduled to feature exhibition matches, including defending US Open champion Carlos Alcaraz, Elena Svitolina, Francis Tiafoe, Maria Sakkari, Chris Eubanks, Jessica Pegula, Matteo Berrettini, and for the retro lovers amongst you, John McEnroe. Flavours of the US Open, the US Open's signature culinary event, is back on Thursday, August the 24th, and will offer attendees a wide range of food and beverage options, coupled with celebrity chefs and top tennis talent on the court. The US Open is one of the world's highest attended annual sporting events, renowned for providing fans with an unparalleled experience, equal parts sport and spectacle. And in 2023, the US Open celebrates 50 years of equal prize money for men and women tennis players. In 1973, the US Open became the first of the four Grand Slam tournaments to offer equal prize money, a pioneering move that shook the sport and began to reshape it towards a more equitable future. Main draw of this year's event takes place August the 28th to September the 10th. To learn more about everything happening at the 2023 US Open, visit usopen.org.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Benjamin Weinstein, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, that was a tough act to follow, wasn't it? Thank you to Benjamin, who is 11 years old, Benjamin Weinstein, and his intro was bought for him by his dad, Ken. They're from Brookline, Massachusetts, and regularly listen on their way to playing tennis together. Benjamin watched his first pro tournament in person at Newport for the semis and finals recently, so I can only assume, having watched Adrian Mannarino win the title for his first ever tennis watching experience, that his tennis fandom is already on the wane. David's here. Hello, David.
Hello. Hello. I am actually curious. Are there out there Adrian Mannarino fans?
Oh, I bet my dad's an Adrian Mannarino fan. That would be
I really want to know.
Up his alley.
I sort of have something of a curiosity to watch him play against really good players and see how bananas he can drive them. But I'm not. I don't think I've ever come across somebody who would call themselves a fan.
You have, David, not knowing it, but cameraman Matthew is a big Adrian Mannarino fan because he likes his flat backhand.
He likes a flat backhand. Mm. In fact, if that's what gets you going, there's probably no one more exciting for you than Adrian Mannarino.
And there is a bit of the Constant Lestien about him in terms of just wind-up merchant and sort of doing things differently. So maybe I'm talking myself into getting into Adrian Mannarino after about 15 years of not being into him.
Mm. Okay, well, you enjoy that, David. Thank you once again to Benjamin for that wonderful intro. If you'd like to get yourself an intro to the Tennis Podcast, get yourself a shout out, generally become a friend and support us in what we do, then the link to do that is in our show notes. Matt's here. Hello, Matt.
Hello. I've had my pre-Grand Slam haircut, so I'm ready.
Yep, Matt's already been compared to Carlos Alcaraz today in appearance by David. Because Alcaraz, one thing that we haven't covered in recent podcasts is Alcaraz's fade, his new haircut, which you hit the nail on the head, David. He really, even minor changes to his hair are completely transformative, aren't they? He looks like a different guy, just having had sort of half an inch taken off.
It makes him look younger. I've recently been discovering what the word fade means in terms of haircuts. I mean, you just seem to have them all up there, Catherine. You know them all off tap, no problem at all.
I'm in touch
but
with
I didn't
the youth,
know what it
David.
Was. Yeah,
you've,
until
when you're a YouTuber, you have to keep in touch with the youth lingo, is what I find.
Yeah, you might be wondering why we haven't done any more YouTubes. It's because I've had my fill of the youth over the last 2 weeks.
More YouTube to come, folks. Don't worry.
Speaking
or
of
do
Alcaraz,
worry, depending on how you felt about the YouTubes. Sorry, Matt. Back to the tennis.
Well, it's not really tennis. It was just that I discovered something about Alcaraz. I found something that he's bad at.
Pray tell.
Which is drawing. Did you see his attempts to draw on the camera the other day? There was this incredible look of concentration on his face, and I thought he was going to come up with some kind of masterpiece. And I think he was trying to draw the emoji with the tongue sticking out, and it was just an absolute disaster.
Penis in a scribble.
It wasn't that bad.
I didn't know what it was. I don't even know what that emoji is, really, that he was trying for. I know which one it is, but I don't know what it's supposed to imply. And he was terrible at it.
Yeah. Given the focus and concentration that went into it, I can only assume he's not very good at drawing. And I felt somewhat relieved, actually.
Zverev posted something on some sort of social media the other day implying that he was better than Alcaraz at golf. The caption, it was them on a golf course, and the caption was something on the lines of, "I found something we can beat him at, guys." And I just thought, well, you're never going to beat him at tennis with posts
attitude
like that, dude. Yeah. Like, talk about living rent-free in your head. Enjoy beating him on the golf course, mate. Speaking of Zverev, he is currently on my telly playing Daniil Medvedev. First match of the day in Cincinnati. That one's on the second court. On the centre court, it is Sloane Stephens and Marketa Vondroušová. Matt has that on his screen. I'm on serve on my match. Matt, where are you?
We are at 5-3 in the first set to Vondroušová,
which the win predictor will feel very validated by.
Yeah, they had 72% for the Wimbledon champion. She's done well since Wimbledon, Vondroušová.
She has.
Quietly well.
I think she's
just
done...
Just
yeah,
won
I think
a
she's
few matches at sort of every event. You know.
Is that well?
Well, considering...
I think she could have just checked out of the tour for a while,
yeah,
quite honestly.
True.
It's such a life adjustment.
I wasn't expecting her to suddenly win Canada.
I've got high standards. I actually... The only
I forgot
addition
that
I've
David's
the
guy that, you know, sees someone win a slam and then predicts them to win the next 12. So
if she was suddenly winning everything that
she was
That
has not come true, has it?
We would go... Oh, yeah, well, of course. She's, you know, she's a Wimbledon champion, isn't she? Makes sense. But it also makes sense that she's just sort of doing some winning and some not winning and just generally Vondroušová-ing.
The only addition, Catherine, that I've made to the agenda after Matt sent it through, and it is comprehensive, we better get on with it, is to say what's happened to Chris Eubanks since Wimbledon. And I was just genuinely curious so that I could go and have a look at his results. Because... Obviously, he didn't win the thing, but he was almost, in many ways, one of the main stories of Wimbledon. And he's won three and he's lost four. Is that par?
Well, it's not new par, is it? It's better than his old par, which was being on the Challenger Tour, you know, not even getting to play ATP-level matches. You know, three wins at tour level. It was not that long ago that he would have snapped your hand off for that. But relative to... adjusted expectations of him, especially with what part of the season we're in, quick hard courts, night sessions, the sort of situations that we predicted would suit him down to the ground. No, it's subpar, which is sport's worst turn of phrase, isn't it? Because it means the absolute opposite of what it expresses. But anyway, I think you know what I mean. It's disappointing. He's somebody that I was so looking forward to seeing on this swing and seeing coming up against the top guys and maybe not always winning or even winning much, but making things fun and being a disruptor. You know, seeing top players having to face him for the first time and problem solve. And because he's losing, he's not playing that many matches and we're not getting to see an awful lot of that. I mean, look, he's not alone. There have been quite a lot of upsets in Cincinnati this week. It's all shaping up quite jaggedly on the men's side of things. Tiafoe is gone, the 10th seed. He's lost to Stan Wawrinka. His summer has been subpar, significantly subpar. Last night, I actually rewatched his episode of Breakpoint because I got a friend staying with me at the moment and she's a big tennis fan but hasn't had a chance to watch the second half of the series. And I said, I'd quite like to rewatch that episode, get me pumped up for the US Open. I mean, I don't need pumping up for the US Open, but I thought, oh, that'd be fun. And there was a point in the episode where my friend Felicity, she went, oh, he's such a tease, Tiafoe, isn't he? And that really sums him up. I feel like he's teased us with what could be and is failing to deliver on it. I don't quite know what's going wrong because he really looks like the same guy. He looks like he's doing all the same things, and maybe it's a process not outcome situation. But remembering back to his press conferences at Wimbledon, he's got a really heightened awareness that your moments in tennis don't last long. Your peak doesn't necessarily last all that long, your opening. And he feels like he's in his now. And yes, process not outcome is a thing. And I know you're thinking, if Catherine keeps with this process not outcome thing, this is going to be a boring podcast for the years to come. But, you know, at some point there has to be an outcome, right? You can't just process, retire. Like, yeah, you should be focusing on the process, but you're doing that in order to get some outcomes. And he would have had such high hopes for this portion of this season, and it could still happen, but it's going to have to happen out of nowhere now with points to defend in New York.
I mean, he has said that he is so motivated by big events and slams and, you know, the US Open in particular. Maybe it's just based off that one run at the US Open last year, but in my mind, I sort of think of him as a different player in New York, and that ability to light up the night session and be swept up by the crowd and the buzz and the atmosphere in New York. I think I'll probably be judging him more after New York. Like, I think it is possible that he could flick a switch and turn it on out of nowhere in New York. And, I mean, his losses since Wimbledon, I mean, I know he was very disappointed with his performance at Wimbledon in particular. He was, you know, he thought he sort of disgraced himself on the court that day.
You just said at Wimbledon like you were doing the
I was thinking that.
Leave the grounds announcement.
Oh,
at
no.
Wimbledon.
Oh, that's a new thing to be
did you hear that
self-conscious
too, David?
About. Great. Yeah.
Johnny Perkins is in there.
You paused for a split second in the sentence.
At Wimbledon.
At Wimbledon. Yeah. As you were, Matt.
Well, it can't be as I was. I will be thinking about that forever now. Anyway, His losses have been Dan Evans, who was, you know, inspired that week and went on to win the title. Milos Raonic, who, look, I think he should be beating Milos Raonic, but that was awkward against Raonic. He was pretty inspired playing at home and just serving him off the court. And then last night against Stan Wawrinka, he ran into vintage Wawrinka. I mean, it was extraordinary watching that back this morning. I sort of seen a lot of reports that Wawrinka was playing really well. And I was like, you know, part of me was like, yeah, I bet he hit a few great backhands and people were getting overexcited. But actually, I watched it all. And
this is Matt saying that.
Yeah, I watched it all and my God, he was brilliant. And like his comments afterwards, he's really pleased with how he's playing now, Stan Wawrinka. And he was doing everything well. It was like vintage Wawrinka. It really was great. So I don't know. I think all of the results you can individually sort of explain, but I suppose it's just the sort of cumulatively you would expect him to maybe have won one of those matches that he's lost. But he's put such emphasis on the US Open. So I'm willing to sort of wait and see and judge him by that. Yeah.
There's an argument we could have had another throwback section of this pod like we did a week ago with Sam Wawrinka and Gael Monfils rolling back the years. My brother sent the message that I've been anticipating for some days and weeks now, which is it just possible that Gael Monfils could do the impossible at the US Open? And of course he quoted me, I only need one. I know. And now that I'm hearing I only need one in my head again, I'm having all sorts of stupid, sentimental, silly, romantic thoughts. I know. You're all rolling your eyes at me. I know. But a moment of indulgence, if you please. Imagine. He's already playing way better tennis than we all thought he would ever play again. Am I right?
Yeah. No, playing way more matches than I even thought he'd be able to play. And I mean, one of my favourite words in tennis podcast vernacular is imagine. So I loved hearing that. But yeah, I'd agree. And even a couple of days ago, I think, first of all, when you saw him get through and win that incredible match at the French Open, assumed that was the moment that we would remember him by, and then his body failed. And then he comes up a couple of days ago, and I saw Tamani Karyol of The Guardian, who's in Cincinnati, say Monfils is struggling with his knee in the match that he was watching. I think that was the one against Cameron Norrie. Mm. And he was, you know, everybody's talking about it on Twitter. I'm not watching the match. I'm just sort of following it on that, and I'm seeing screenshots of Monfils grimacing and wincing, and I'm thinking, oh God, you know, just don't want to see that. If he gets beaten by Norrie or whoever it is, okay, just don't do this to him with a knee injury. He wins the match, and then he goes and wins the next one. I mean, I can't remember who he beat yesterday, but it was somebody good.
Alex de Minaur, who's been in great form.
Well, there you go.
Although we do now know who Gael Monfils is playing. I was really excited about this Gael Monfils run, and then I looked at the draw, and he's playing Novak Djokovic for the 19th time, having lost.
Yeah, the problem with rolling back the years for Gael Monfils is that he's rolling back to all the years when he was consistently losing to Novak Djokovic.
That is an astonishing head-to-head, isn't it?
I mean, wild.
Maybe it shouldn't be because Djokovic is that good, but to think that they've gone through best part of two decades playing one another when Djokovic was really young and Monfils was the senior of the two, and to not beat him once is amazing.
Yeah, it's a depressing head-to-head because it's just a match that it's Gasquet-Nadal, isn't it? You just cross it off the schedule.
Yes.
Shouldn't say things like this before the event has happened because it could lead to significant egg on face. But
and I'm sure anyone trying to hype that match will point to the fact that, you know, Monfils, as we've said, he's been doing a lot of winning recently. He's won, I think, 5 matches against top 30 players in the last few weeks. You know, really good wins. And Novak Djokovic has played one set since Wimbledon. You know, it might be a good time to try and catch Novak Djokovic, but you know, we know that tennis is matchups, and that one clearly is a bad one for Monfils, rust or not.
Yeah, that one set 6-4 over Alejandro Davidovich-Fokina before Davidovich-Fokina retired. Do we have any takes on Novak Djokovic and where he's at, or is it just impossible on the basis of that one set? I mean, I don't have any takes, so it's fine if you don't either. Blank faces. Okay. Should have checked. Should have checked before answering that question. I did suspect that would be the case.
Because Davidovich Fokina had had such a good week before that, and in on a surface that there's no reason why he shouldn't be good on it. But I'm not. I think of him as ostensibly clay court specialist, but he showed in that run that he can do it. And I just would have loved to have seen a fully fit Davidovich Fokina for the whole match, giving it a go against Djokovic. And we didn't get to see that. And it's just, I hope he's not really badly injured. I mean, he pulled up pretty nastily at the time. I will offer you just a crumb of hope for Monfils, historically, which is that Tim Henman arrived into his seventh match against Pete Sampras 6-0 down and won the seventh in Cincinnati. And there were a few clips of that being shown on social media this week. And he also arrived 8-0 down against Leighton Hewitt and won their ninth match. But that's not 18-0, is it?
Yeah, that's a lot of Tim Henman stats.
Well, that's what I've got in my head, Catherine. Like, okay. The 90s.
I do remember him finally beating Leighton Hewitt. Staying with the men's for a few moments, another handful of upsets for you. Kasper Ruud losing to Max Purcell, 6-4 in the third. Andre Rublev losing out to Emil Ruiz-Savory, 7-6 in the third. Holger Rune retired against Mackenzie McDonald, trading by a set and a break. And Jannik Sinner losing to Dusan Lajovic in two straight sets. Maybe we should take Sinner apart from those handful of upsets. Is this just sort of run-of-the-mill tours, ups and downs? Or do we have any specific takes on any of these defeats other than there's a huge amount of depth in the game, and particularly at tour level versus Grand Slam level, these sort of upsets can happen?
Yeah, I think that's probably the overall take. I do think the sort of chasing pack of players, you know, Ruud, Rublev, Rune, you know, all of those that we've just listed, are not as much of a sort of bankers as we've had as sort of chasing pack players in the last 10 years. So, you know, they're young, they're still sort of jostling. They've all shown a really good peak level, but also they've all shown some inconsistency. And yeah, I think,
yeah, they're not Thomas Burdick, are they?
No, they're not. Or David Ferrer or Joe Wilfried Tsonga, you know, who were reliably getting to latter stages and losing to the best players. I think, you know, these players are all great, but they're a bit more susceptible to upsets. Even Kei Nishikori.
You could rely on him to get to a quarterfinal and lose to Djokovic.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm worried about Rune. He has lost every match he's played since Wimbledon. Two of them were in the Hopman Cup, and then to Garone in Canada, and having to retire against McDonald. I think he's doing that thing of, he's done it quite a lot, playing through little niggles and injuries. And I think it was the wrist towards the start of the year. Now I think it's the back. Something's not right there with Rune. And that's quite a concern at the moment, I would say, for him.
Tricky stage of his career, where it's probably the first season he started getting appearance fees, for example. First season where there feels like a massive cost to not playing. I'm not suggesting that is the decision-making train of thought, but that is a thing that happens to tennis players in their second season after a breakout. The shape of everything changes. Sponsored demands, all of your parameters and metrics of success, suddenly you've got stakeholders in you. It's all just different and weird. And I went really big on my Rune hype. I still think he's got the goods, but this worries me as well. Because his body is so maxed out, isn't it? And that physicality is so much a part of who he is as a tennis player. He cannot afford to be frail, because it's not a big, bulky beefy Stan Wawrinka-like strength. It's a sinewy strength. It's a Djokovic-like strength, and I think it needs to be so finely tuned to work. I don't think he can just sort of bruiser his way through niggles. So, yeah, agree. Concern for him. Jannik Sinner losing to Dusan Lajovic. Thoughts, feelings, surprise levels?
I find it a bit disappointing, really, given that he's come in as the champion. And look, Dusan Lajovic is a good player who has had some good weeks this year, producing some good results. And I'm aware that it's very easy to just not factor him into a result. But the guy has just won on the same surface the week before, and I think it's a shame when they don't back it up at all. But you look at the results that have come in the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of that. Dan Evans had that week of his life in Washington, and he's lost both of the matches since then. It isn't easy to back these things up. Again, I think it makes me think of Jessica Pegula, who lost her first set the other day and still ends up winning her match because she's just such a pro. I'm not saying that Sinner's not a pro, but I mean, it's some people have just got that ability to reset and go again. And I suppose it points to how bloody hard it is to play back-to-back Masters 1000 events like that. There's not been many that have won them both. I think of Pat Rafter, Rafael Nadal's done it. You know, there's a couple of others. But it's tough. But I still feel like Sinner has, yeah, it makes me question him just a little bit because, you know, now he's got to go and back it up at a Grand Slam.
I suppose there's a slight element here that, given how kind of weird some of the last few seasons have been because of COVID and this quite gradual this gradual arrival of the 2 week Masters events, like I can't imagine that Sinner will have played that many back to back 1 week Masters events after each other. Certainly not that many after he's just, I mean, he'd never won one, had he? So he's certainly not had that experience before. And I don't know, it feels like maybe that's part of the reason why we're seeing some of these upsets for these younger players. You know, maybe they're just not so used to that sort of quick turnaround in these big events as maybe some of the older players who have grown up their whole career doing it. Maybe they are more used to it. I don't know, maybe that's a slight factor in why we're seeing some surprises. But there is a really quite interesting factor to all this, and that's the number four seed at the US Open. Like, I think everyone would say that Djokovic and Alcaraz are, you know, clearly one and two in men's tennis at the moment. Medvedev at the US Open, given he's won that event, given he's proved himself in slams, given he's a hard court specialist, he would probably be, you know, third. So you want to avoid them as much as you can in the draw, and obviously that fourth seed is what protects you from them until the semi-finals. And at the moment, Holger Rune is in that position, but obviously him going out has left the door open, except Rublev hasn't been able to take advantage, nor's Ruud, nor's Sinner, and actually Stefanos Tsitsipas is the only guy left who I think can take that number four seeding at the US Open from Rune. I think he needs to get to the semi-finals in Cincinnati this week, so two more wins against either, well, Hurkacz and then either Popperin or Rusevori. So that, you know, that's not easy. Those are tough matches, but that's quite a lot at stake, I would say, for Tsitsipas, given that he's not got a particularly good record at the US Open. You'd have thought, okay, doesn't impact what his first week's going to look like. He's still got to get through that first week. But if he can be the fourth seed, that would certainly help him if he were to get to the quarterfinals, just avoid Medvedev, Alcaraz and Djokovic. So yeah, there's been quite a lot at stake there, and most of them haven't been able to take advantage. But let's see whether Tsitsipas can.
Very good point. Tsitsipas beat Ben Shelton last night in two tie breaks, now plays Hurkacz. David, you watched that match. There's quite a lot of Ben Shelton negativity around that is completely unwarranted. Sort of people saying, oh, you're nowhere near as good as the hype. The hype being the fact that he reached a Grand Slam quarterfinal out of nowhere and You know, we said at the time, great, great result, but extremely raw game, lots and lots to work on. I see this as a sort of fact-finding year, just figuring out what life on tour looks like for him, trying to enjoy it. I don't know what the future holds, but, you know, you're taking Stefanos Tsitsipas to tie breaks. Okay, you're not winning them, but it's not all bad.
Not at all. I 100% agree. To me, we were talking about what's par for Christopher Eubanks. I'd say if I'm Ben's dad, Brian, who's now coaching him full-time, I had the pleasure of meeting him at Wimbledon and had a chat with him. And I think Ben is doing exactly what you would hope he would be doing. Yes, maybe you want him to win a few more of the matches that he plays. Of course, you want him to win as many as he can. But he looks really good and is developing nicely. He was the man who beat Eubanks actually in Cincinnati, and it was close, but he won the match. He took Tsitsipas to these tie breaks. He didn't look like winning. He just looked like keeping it really, really close. And all the way through the sets, I kept thinking, this is going to be decided by a few points because Shelton's serve it's a mule kick of a serve, that left-handed delivery. And he is athletic and he can rally. He's good enough to rally with Tsitsipas. But you could just tell Tsitsipas knows how to construct and win important points and really just turn it on and tighten it up. And there'd be just those one or two loose shots from Shelton when it really mattered. And that's what decided both of the tiebreaks. It wasn't a surprise at all. I don't necessarily expect Shelton to have a great run at the US Open, but I'd be really encouraged for him for future years.
Matt, your Cotton Eye Joe moment for this week involves a bee, or rather a woman impersonating a bee.
Yeah, and also Stefanos Tsitsipas, which sort of makes sense that in a very weird situation, Stefanos Tsitsipas found himself at the centre of it. I actually thought he dealt with it quite well.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
It was sort of the most mature I've ever seen him be. No pun intended.
But yeah, if you just sort of sent me the transcript of the exchange, what's wrong, there's someone behind me imitating a bee, and told me to guess the context, I probably would have said, I don't know, primary school? And yet it was the sort of main core of a big tennis event.
He was very keen that she not be thrown out. He was to the umpire, he was like, I'll manage the situation. Don't worry, I've got this.
Unlike the person sitting behind her. Did you notice that? That the guy in the crowd was like pointing at her. It's her, like sort of telling on her. Yeah.
I think if I was sat behind, if I was sat where they were sat, like on the front rows, and there was a woman in front of me giving us all a bad name by doing B sounds the player was about to serve, yeah, I'd be calling them out as well. Yeah. And also very keen to make it clear it's not me.
Yeah.
I am in full possession of my marbles, thank you very much. I thought Tsitsipas navigated that extremely bizarre situation masterfully. I watched Felix Auger-Aliassime beat Matteo Berrettini in the opening round, or rather I dipped in and out of that match. I watched quite a lot of it and I was really impressed with him, particularly because he lost the first set. I thought he just would not have the confidence to come back in that match. And yeah, but Berrettini's serve did suddenly drop off a cliff. He was handed a bit of a gift there from Auger-Aliassime, but he really stepped up to it and showed a belief in his game and in his forehand in particular that I wasn't expecting to see. I thought his confidence would just be completely shot, but he was playing quite front foot tennis. And they've both got quite similar game styles, haven't they? Auger-Aliassime and Berrettini, the sort of mechanical looking backhand and the big beefy forehand that you can do so much more with, lots of running around your backhand. And I thought that was pretty big for Auger-Aliassime. And then he loses to Adrian Mannarino. Now, is that a reversion to the recent Auger-Aliassime mean? Or is that anyone can lose to Adrian Mannarino?
That's a good question. I feel it could be a bit of both, really, because Mannarino is the last person you want to play if you're anything short of your most confident and have your conviction about your game. Ogier Aliassime, at the end of last year, he'd have beaten Adrian Mannarino comfortably when he was winning those Davis Cup ties. It was all secure. He knew where his head was. He knew what he was trying to do. And he had total confidence that when he tried to do it, he would do it. I just don't think that conviction and confidence and security is there at the moment. And is that because of the injury he's had and that taking his stability away? Has that then led on to losses that then get it to his head? Don't know the exact reasons, but he doesn't look convincing to me. And the bit of that match I saw against Berrettini, I saw two players who looked just really unsure of themselves. And I didn't watch all of it, so I take your appraisal of it more than my own, Catherine. But I just feel like he's searching still for whatever the mean of his real form is. But he's not been good for months, and I'm sure the injury's played a part in that.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Rinse and repeat on what Matt and I were saying about him last week, I guess. Zverev's just taking the opening set against Medvedev. Alcaraz, the only player that we haven't really discussed. He's about to play Tommy Paul again, which I'm delighted about because their match last week was brilliant. I will happily watch that match again. Thank you very much. And I wonder if Tommy Paul is quite happy to have the chance again to beat Carlos Alcaraz. I don't know, maybe he would have rather played insert name of a lesser player than Carlos Alcaraz here. He took three sets, Alcaraz, to beat Jordan Thompson last night. It was the last match of the day, so it was in the middle of the night for us. Didn't get the chance to watch much. I've watched a few highlights. There are always highlights after a Carlos Alcaraz match, and they don't necessarily give you a good impression of what the match was like because it's just a collection of moments of brilliance for Carlos Alcaraz, which are wonderful and electrifying, but don't necessarily define the match. I have seen a lot of footage of him generally looking just like he could not possibly be enjoying life more. Just fantastically relaxed. Joining in with Mexican waves during a delay on the court. Just soaking up everything and loving it. Just looking completely unaffected by it. Or rather affected by it all, but in all the good ways and none of the bad ways. And we always say, we don't know if that will continue. We desperately hope it'll continue. Well, it's so far it's continuing. Touch wood.
Mm. Yeah, there was a video that the very good social media team in Canada put out last week, which was to get the players singing the national anthem of Canada, and all of them were sort of a bit nervous and sort of, you know, wary of how they might look in the edit. And then they just cut to Alcaraz and he just sort of belted out of tune. Oh, Canada! You know, it was like, yeah, he was just happy to be there and involved in that video. And I was like, yep, okay, those are the Alcaraz vibes.
Wouldn't you love to be the sort of person that when asked to sing just out of context on demand, you go, yeah, all right then, and not shrivel up into a ball of self-loathing. Yeah, I can't wait for Alcaraz, Tommy Paul rerun. That's going to be fun. Moving on to the WTA, could we have a score update on Sloane Stephens and Markéta Vondroušová, please?
First set, Vondroušová 7-5. Stephens got the break back, but then Vondroušová broke again and won the set.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Really different flavour in the women's side of things, where pretty much all of the big names are still in. A few of them have come close to not being in. Elena Rybakina, three sets for her against Yelena Ostapenko last night.
That's a fun match at the moment, Rybakina, Ostapenko. Ostapenko hates Rybakina.
Why?
I don't know whether Ostapenko needs a reason to hate someone. but I think it goes back to their match in Rome, where there was definitely some tension there. And last night, Rybakina's sister was in the box roaring. Ostapenko was giving death stares to the Rybakina box. There was a cold handshake, no look handshake from Ostapenko at the end. Yeah, I'm quite into those two playing each other.
Looking that up afterwards.
Yeah, so Rybakina's still standing. Sabalenka still standing, but she's had to tough it out as well. Jabeur needed to go all the way to 7-6 in the third to beat Angelina Kalinina. She was down and out in that match. She's not a great closer, Kalinina, and Jabeur had to take advantage of that and really surge in the dying stages. But it was ropey in a lot of places from Jabeur. Tough watch, that one.
Yeah, it was quite stressful, actually, because Jabeur was fine. Like, she was a set in the breakup and playing quite well, and then suddenly seemed to get quite tight and stressed, and then it really ran away from her. I think she was 5-1 down in that third set. It all just sort of fell apart for about 45 minutes, and it really looked like she was going to lose, as you say. And yeah, watching that, my mind did go to what we were saying after the Wimbledon final, where it feels like she needs to be a bit of an underdog in one of those big Grand Slam matches to maybe play a bit more loose and a bit more free. And in this match, it was only when she was suddenly on the brink of defeat and sort of became the underdog in the match where it felt like she was able to free up and start playing her good tennis again. When she was trying to close it out in two sets, she just inexplicably, it seemed, got quite tight. But in the end, a good win, I suppose. You know, her first match since Wimbledon. She probably needed to somehow try and put Wimbledon behind her, and getting wins will presumably help to do that a little bit. But yeah, it was quite a stressful watch, actually. Not the sort of fun that you usually associate with Ons Jabeur. And she's now got another tough one against Donna Vekic, who's had two two very impressive tight wins. And I did notice Vekic on court after the match yesterday, knowing that she was going to play on Jabeur. She said that they practiced together at Wimbledon, and Donna said, "I told my coach that I'm never practicing with her again." Presumably because of all the slice and the variety, and maybe not just a good practice partner, not someone who's going to give you a lot of rhythm and a lot of balls. So yeah, she said it in a nice sort of jokey way. I don't think there's any beef between them, but yeah, intrigued to see how that one goes.
Yeah, big couple of wins for Donna Vekic, Jennifer Brady, and a hard-fought win over Victoria Azarenka overnight last night. She'll already be pleased with that week, Donna Vekic, and I'd say she's got a chance against Ons Jabeur if she really shows up for that one. Pegula just keeps on showing up and toughing it out. She was in such a tussle against Martina Trevisan, and it crossed my mind, you know, does she really have the motivation in the stomach, given she's already had a great hard court season, she's got what she needs ahead of the US Open, she might already be feeling a bit overcooked and in need of a rest ahead of a Grand Slam, which she presumably has significant ambitions of winning. Does she really have the fire in the belly to get into the trenches to win this one? Well, she made me look silly for that thought even crossing my mind, because, I mean, she lives in the trenches, doesn't she? She loves it there, David.
Well, it crossed my mind too when I saw her lose that first set, because you do ask yourself the question, is this hitting the wall? Is this last week was, as maybe Jannik Sinner found it, a lot, a great achievement, and blimmin' hell, got to go again from the start at another tournament, same level, blimmin' it. It's a big ask, I think. And I have such admiration for her. She's growing on me more and more all the time. Just what an admirable character she is. And I am starting to enjoy watching her play more. And I just, somebody who just keeps showing up when they're not necessarily part of the conversation as much as those three particular big names at the top of the sport. And then we had the little flirtation of Barbora Krejcikova maybe being in that group as well. And Pegula, yes, she's had some disappointments at the Grand Slams, and I think there's still a massive question mark there. But week in, week out, she comes and she plays and she produces, and I'm here for that.
Yeah. Karolina Muchova is having a week. Two tough wins for her. Beatriz Haddad-Maia, she looked down and out in that one. She lost the opening set. She was having treatment. I was talking about the curse again on the WhatsApp group. Decided to switch over to another match because couldn't bear to watch injured Muchova again. Checked the scores, she had won. And she backed it up with a win over Petra Martic as well. Now plays Maria Sakkari. Of course, it was Sakkari that Muchova beat in the opening round of Roland Garros, wasn't it? To kind of take up her seeding and scheduled path through that draw. Coco Gauff beat Maya Sharif 6-2, 6-2, and now plays Linda Noskova, who I think won a check-off with Petra Kvitova, didn't she? That match was happening yesterday, was keeping an eye on it. Świątek is rolling, beat Danielle Collins 6-1, 6-love. Didn't understand really why Danielle Collins wasn't able to make that match closer. She was awful. She played a kind of dumb match. It felt like she not gave up, she was still sort of physically putting the effort in. She wasn't giving up on points, but it felt to me like her mind checked out of that and she just thought, I've got no chance here, I'm just gonna kind of bash the ball around. And the scoreline reflected that. One in love for Świątek. Zheng Siwen next for Świątek. Of course, we all have made our assessments of Zheng Siwen. Well, maybe I'm speaking for you and I shouldn't, but I feel like I've made my assessment of how good Zheng Siwen can be on the basis of one set she won against Iga Świątek at the French Open last year. And she hasn't done what I thought she would do since then. She's still incredibly young, and I believe she has the talent still to kick on and achieve good things. But I'm interested to see her, to see where she stacks up against Świątek 14 months on.
Yeah, me too. It's such a tennis thing how, like, you know, it's very possible that we'd be doing quite a big section on this podcast if yesterday's match against Venus Williams had gone differently. You know, Venus Williams was a set and two love up against Xiong Qin Wen before, you know, and really playing well, crushing the ball. It was incredible. It was backing up a top 20 win that Venus Williams had over Veronika Kudermetova a couple of days before. Just, you know, great to see. And yet, from a Xiong Qin Wen perspective, it was like, well, you know, what's happening here? But then she gets through that match, wins, you know, I think 12 of the last 13 games. And now I'm really interested to see how she fares against Iga Świątek again. It's just narratives of players can just change so quickly in tennis that it's always so difficult to grasp sort of even what kind of form a player is in. Because yesterday was such a match of two halves. Is the first half Xiong Qin Wen going to show up, in which case she's not winning many games against Iga Świątek? Or is the Xiong Qin Wen that we know she can be going to show up, in which case I think she can really push Świątek? It's always sort of fascinating to me how thin the line seems to be between those two. But yeah, you're right. I think it was that match against Świątek that really brought it to everyone's attention just how good she could be. But the signs have been good recently. Partnered with Wim Fisset, won her first title. This is an opportunity now to, you know, to push on again. Even if she loses, I think it would be nice to see her perform well and have another big moment. Feels like she hasn't had that moment for a year or so.
Yeah, it was awesome seeing Venus Williams beat Veronika Kudermetova. It was absolutely awesome. And I was expecting that to be just a cool, awesome moment in itself. I hadn't got my hopes up for her continuing the run. And then there she is, a set and a break up against Xiong Qin Wen. And the stats already been produced about it. The fact that had it happened, it would have been the first time she's won back-to-back matches in 4 years. And yeah. I suddenly was like, this is just the absolute coolest thing ever, and I should have just settled for the moment, because as we know, it is the hope that kills. But Venus is an absolute queen, and I'm assuming she's got a US Open wild card. I saw
she
the
has,
men's
yeah.
wild cards have been announced. Have the women's as well? Yep.
It'll be her 24th US Open.
Blooming heck. That's bonkers.
Bonkers. I remember watching live her final against Martina Hingis and waking up in the middle of the night to watch it. I think here in the UK, it was. But you were 1 year old, Matt, at the time.
Yes. So I was.
So he might.
I was quite likely awake in the middle of the night. Yeah.
Wow.
It's mad.
Wow. Would anyone care to make predictions at this stage of proceedings? And don't just stick with the prediction you made at the beginning of the week for the sake of it. I want to genuinely know, on the basis of, you know, having seen 4 days of this tournament already so far, who you think's winning each title?
Well, Catherine, you handed me the Coco Gauff baton from last week, and I dutifully picked it up for the predictions, but I have to be honest, a lot of that was points based. There were I don't know how many, but there were a lot of points on offer for Coco Gauff. I do think she is looking good. I am increasingly persuaded by her and the Brad Gilbert involvement and what he did with Andy Roddick's backhand when he first took over him 20 years ago. Just makes me think of the effect he can have and the ways he maybe has helped clear her mind. But then I still come back to what you said the other day. What happens if and when she faces Iga Świątek? And I believe she's in the same half of the draw as her. And Świątek is looking really good. So I expect her to win. I still think when everything happens, if and everybody plays their best tennis, I expect Świątek to win. So I'd go for her. And in the
Even if she plays Rybakina?
Yes, at the moment. I would have concerns over Rybakina just physically after last week. And the US Open will be very interesting to me because I think when those two and so, when those top three play their best tennis, it's very, very close, I feel. You could really choose any of them and it might just be on the day. In the men's, I would probably go for Djokovic just because he just looks balanced. He looks fresh and I don't know. I'd still go with him.
Matt?
Well, unlike David, I'm doing badly in the predictions, so I have to make predictions that I think are going to happen. And I did go with Iga Świątek, so I will stick with that. Kind of for all the reasons David's just said. Also, I think a lot of the players that I would expect to push her might be tired or kind of running out of gas a little bit, you know, Rybakina, Sabalenka hasn't been particularly convincing last couple of tournaments. Pegula, you know, she might hit the wall at some point over the next few rounds. Like it feels like Świątek probably should win this tournament. So I'll go with her. Men's side, I find it so hard just because I've got very little to go on with Djokovic. But I mean, other than, you know, 15 years of him winning everything, obviously. But in this moment, I don't know how he's looking so much. I'll go Alcaraz.
On the same basis as last week, if Alcaraz is in a draw.
Yeah, I tend to pick him.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, Catherine, I'm not impressed with Medvedev from what I've been watching in this
no.
match. He's a set and 2-1. He's 2-1 up in the second, but it's been so error-strewn. It's really not been a good match at all.
Look, I know he's not a power player, but he looks underpowered to me.
Yeah. And when he tries to heave the ball, he's missing. Zverev really seems like he's only got a rally and eventually Medvedev misses.
Look, I only picked him because, once again, I was too slow off the mark and I missed the pick I really wanted.
Who was that?
I wanted Sabalenka.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
think... I think I would pick Świątek now, but I guess Sabalenka's got a chance. I watched Medvedev last week and he wasn't there at all. He looked like his heart wasn't... I can't quite remember who he lost to, but... Right, yeah. He looked... I mean, he was 5-1 up in the first set tiebreak in that match, I think. Or maybe even 6-1, actually. Should have won that first set. But when he didn't, it looked to me like he didn't have the stomach for that fight. And I thought, okay, yeah... He will recognise that wasn't good enough and that he'll need to find something this week in Cincinnati. And I know he loves Cincinnati. He's got a good record there. I don't know. I was wrong. Long story short, because you're right, David. He looks a way off beating Zverev at the moment, let alone beating any top player and winning the title here. So... yeah, weird. I really wasn't expecting him to have a dip in form on the US hard courts. Was not expecting that at all. Don't quite know what to read into it. I suspect, I mean, his pre-tournament press conferences are always a joy, aren't they? But I suspect he's still in this tournament, but I suspect his pre-US Open press conference might be fascinating because he's honest, isn't he? He'll tell us how he's feeling and what's going on in his head. So that is it, I think, not for Cincinnati. There's still 3.5 more days of that. And we'll be back to wrap it up on Monday, a pod that, all being well, will be recorded, or at least 2/3 recorded, from Heathrow Airport. Again, what could go wrong? 1/3 recorded in Solihull. I expect to be very excited and pumped. I'm always pumped for Grand Slam trips. It's just an absolute treat and a privilege that we get to go to the 4 Grand Slams for the pod. But going to New York for the US Open is, maybe it's because I did it as a kid with my dad a couple of times, going specifically to New York as a fan for the US Open, that it sort of triggers those memories for me. But I am excited. So expect those vibes on Monday's podcast. If you can't wait till then for your next podcast and you're a friend of the Tennis Podcast, then you're in luck. If you're not a friend of the Tennis Podcast, then you know how to sort that out, because yesterday we recorded the Kim Clijsters story. It's up and it's available for friends, our latest edition of Tennis Relived, the US Open edition for this year. It includes her finally winning a Grand Slam final at the fifth attempt at Flushing Meadows in 2005, something, of course, that we ended up serendipitously talking a lot about in the last stages of Wimbledon this year, pertaining to Ons Jabeur, of course. But we also talk about her incredible comeback after retirement and giving birth to her daughter Jada to win the US Open in 2009 as a wild card. It's a moment that'll make you smile, to relive the scenes of Kim and her daughter celebrating on the court, scenes that I think live long in the memory of so many tennis fans, and a victory that was a mix of emotions for Kim herself.
Pretty soon after, I think when I went to the hotel, I kind of had a really bad kind of breakdown moment where I guess the reality of it all sinks in, because after my dad had passed away, I got invited to play at Wimbledon for the opening of the roof on center court, and kind of started training, and I guess looking back on it, maybe didn't properly take the time to grieve the loss of my father, because it was a very intense year. And then, because I remember there were moments where, you know, my dad, when he wasn't traveling with me, I would kind of always give him a call really quickly before a match if I was a little bit nervous or something. And I'd caught myself walking into the locker room, and I think it was before the match against Venus, and started dialing his number real quick. And I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, he's not around anymore. But it was such a habit for me to speak to him, even when it was like nighttime in Belgium. And so, yeah, I had that moment, which I felt like, okay, it's the realization of certain losses and they kick in, and right up it was great and exciting. But then after a while, you think, and you have this moment, and you relive the past months, years that you've gone through, and I think the reality of it sinks in, and the disbelief, what just happened? Like, how is this possible?
Yeah, that just a snippet of the incredible contribution that Kim Clijsters herself made to this podcast. She was so generous with her time. She told stories and gave perspectives that I've never heard before, despite Clijsters' 2009 US Open win being right in the sweet spot of my tennis fandom. I followed that run so closely, and I remember those scenes of her and Jada on the court celebrating afterwards so vividly. I still learned so much about Kim and her story over the course of that episode. So that is up and available for friends. If you'd like to become a friend, the link to do that is in our show notes. Already a friend is Katie Sullivan, because she has brought today's episode mascot Usher into our lives. Usher is a 12-year-old Labradoodle from British Columbia. Kate and her husband got Usher when they lived in Boston in 2010 as a bribe to the kids to make the move abroad more appealing. He turned out to be an awesome dog who loves people and chasing balls all over Wandsworth Common. Now they're back in the UK. And that is just lovely. Lovely, Katie. And I'm looking at a picture now of Usher. He's staring dead at the camera. Points for that. Not easy with a dog. And he looks like your classic man's best friend. I see a lot of Labradoodles on Wimbledon Common, and they're always just loving life. I mean, dogs do love life, don't they? But Labradoodles are an absolute delight, and Usher looks exactly that. So thank you, Katie. Thank you, Usher. Thank you to our mascots. David's got Maisie, mine is Xenia, and Matt's is Darwin. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss, who are currently in Australia for the conclusion of the Women's World Cup. Woohoo!
Yes.
We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew, and we have shout-outs, Matt.
Yes, we've got Lindsay Hill, who is in Atlanta.
Right, Lindsay.
Hello, Lindsay. Like Lindsay Davenport. An Atlanta of tennis tournament fame and 1996 Olympics fame.
I heard Lindsay Davenport have a bit of a go at the WTA the other day on Tennis Channel for not having announced the WTA finals date or location yet, which I found quite interesting. And yeah, we know nothing. Here we are in August and we don't know where the WTA finals is going to be or when. So,
yeah, and I genuinely don't know whether that's because the WTA know but aren't ready to make it public for whatever reason, or whether they don't even know. I don't know what they know. We will try and do some investigations, folks. But in the meantime, Lindsay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Lindsay.
We've also got Jeff and Dina, who are in San Jose. And Jeff says, last year, I dedicated my shout-out to our beloved dog, Benji, who became the subject of the now infamous Send Me Pictures of Your Woodle incident.
No one sent me pictures of their woodle. Not one.
You were responsible for a very, very enjoyable 20 minutes of me laughing. I know that much.
Oh.
How are we spelling Jeff? Like Tarango?
Yes.
Oh. Dina, like Dina Asher Smith. It's the World Athletics Championship starting on Saturday.
That's right. Excellent. Well, thank you both.
Thank you, Jeff and Dina, for that incredible moment from last year and for being a friend this year as well. Much appreciated.
And finally, we've got Kevin Lanky, who is in Indiana. And Kevin says, this is a special shout out to my wife, Steph, who's joining me for her first live in-person tennis tournament experience in Cincinnati this weekend. Steph's work schedule finally allows us both to go to the tournament together for the first time. Which is lovely.
I love that. Have a great time, Steph.
And Kevin was part of our Wimbledon newsletter predictions and was the only one of us to pick Vondroušová to win the final against Ons Jabeur. Got a number of sets wrong, so unfortunately scored no points. But he did pick Vondroušová. And I can bring you up-to-date tennis news. Vondroušová has just beaten Sloane Stephens in straight sets.
So Kevin and Steph might be watching Vondroušová in Cincinnati this weekend. I think that's a really good win for Vondroušová. I mean, evidently, I've been podcasting and not watched a single ball of it. But on paper, given how well I saw Sloane Stephens play a couple of days ago, I think that's big. Well done.
Are we saying winning five of your six matches since Wimbledon? Is that well, David? Or not yet?
It's all right.
Wellish.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Steph and Kevin. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. I have just one more shout-out submission. I would like to say hello and thank you to Denise, Reggie's mum, for hand-knitting us all bespoke socks in Wimbledon colours. They arrived in the post at my flat yesterday and it was the most wholesome thing that's ever been delivered by the Royal Mail, honestly. And they are genuinely lovely. They're so soft. I'm tempted to steal yours and Matt's, to be honest, David. It's just the loveliest, kindest thing. And, we've got so many lovely listeners who do just outrageously generous, kind things just out of the goodness of their hearts. And it restores your faith in people. So thank you for that restoration of faith and for the wonderful socks, Denise.
Yeah,
and thank you.
Thank you
for producing Reggie.
Thank you for producing Reggie. And just on the socks, I'll let you know if they fit, because I imagine
they
that
are
took
big.
Quite a bit of took
they
a bit of
big.
Wool. I would have thought.
Mm. It's like you know, Papa Bear, Mama Bear, Baby Bear in Goldilocks. If you put the three sets of socks next to one another, it looks like that. Content will be made available on our social media, folks. Head to Instagram for more on the bespoke Wimbledon socks knitted by Reggie's mum, Denise. So thank you, Denise. Thank you to all of our friends of the Tennis Podcast. It is thanks to you that we are headed to New York next week. We'll speak to you Monday, folks.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.